Hey, I know you've heard me talk about trust-driven care, and I know you heard me talk about why it's so important, but let me tell you this. One of the aspects that just seems so small that is such a big deal with our software, trust-driven care, is the ability to communicate with your patients. Now, when I say communicate, I mean have a two-way conversation. That is way different than just sending out appointment reminders via text message. That sounds like communication, but I'll challenge you to this. Imagine if you could only send one-way communication to your spouse for a week, and imagine how frustrated they would be if they can't respond to you. Your patients are feeling the same way. I don't know why we ever started this idea that we should send one-way communication to patients that they can't respond to. So don't be that provider. In fact, why don't you become a provider that allows for two-way communication, text messaging? You can respond, they can respond. But let's take it one step further. What if somebody submits a question on your website? Could you immediately start a back and forth conversation with them? We've added that into trust-driven care. Now, let's say somebody leaves you a review on Google and they have a question or they have something where they don't understand what happened. You could engage them in a conversation and quell any of their fears. The end goal, of course, is always to make sure that they become a patient or they're a patient who gets more appointments. Why? Because that's why we're in this game, to help provide the right care to the right people at the right time. And when they're asking questions, usually means there's something going on. Trust-driven care allows for two-way text communication, along with email, along with surveys, along with forms, along with Google My Business integration, along with website chat widgets. It's all there so that you can run a better practice that communicates, grows, and has a massive impact in your community. Hey, welcome to Clinic Gym Radio. I am so glad you're here. It is our goal to help 10,000 offices build into a clinic gym. Why? It's the best version of musculoskeletal care, and it's the only version that's perfectly in line with the evidence. The word exercise comes up more than any other word in the research, so let's implement that. And this interview was built to help you understand how to do that. Let's jump in. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of Clinic Gym Radio. I am your host, as always, Dr. Josh Satterley, and it's my pleasure today to be joined by Dr. Katie Hartlieb. Katie, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Dr. Josh.
Absolutely. Well, I was lucky enough to meet Katie on the first time, I think, was on the campus of Parker. You are an instructor at Parker University, and you also are an attendee of all the Parker events, which is great because you're not a chiropractor by trade, right? You're a What do you call it? Clinical nutritionist? What's your title?
Yes. I am professor, and I run the functional nutrition master's program over at Parker.
Yeah. Yes. So if anybody listening is interested in attaining their master's in functional nutrition, I think they've got a great program. And I think for those of us in practice, can they do it all remote, Katie?
Yeah, it is a remote and asynchronous program. So kind of fun to also spread the word to your listeners here.
Well, they sync up at graduation, right? You do get to walk and get a degree and everything, which is the only part that I think really matters on the synchronicity. Yeah. Awesome. Well, Katie, I want to talk to you today because you are a practitioner. I don't know what you call practitioner of the motivational interviewing methodology. And I think that's one of those things in healthcare that those who know about it absolutely love it, think, oh, I can never operate without this. Those who have never heard of it go, I don't even know what that is. So I was hoping today we could maybe talk about kind of what that is, how you stumbled upon it, and then how folks listening can use it to establish that better relationship with their patient, maybe ask questions in a way that, you know, get people to actually do their take-home homework. You know, we're always struggling with like, oh, I'm going to give you the best exercise in the world to get rid of your back pain. And then they're so great, except for the part where you don't do them. They're ineffective, you know? I'm sure you run into this in nutrition as well, but I wanted to get into that and see if maybe we can spill over some skill sets to our listeners that will improve things. And at the end, maybe you can share some resources if they want to kind of dive into this deeper like you have.
That sounds fabulous. I love talking about what I would consider these health behavior change conversations. So if I start to go off on any crazy tangents, though, you can reel me in.
Reel you in and change your behavior? You're like, hey, wait. No. Yeah. So along the way, you might hear Katie respond, refer to this as MI, which is the short term or what is it, shorthand for motivational interviewing. But it's also confusing, I was saying, because you live in the state of Michigan. And then what was the other one you got? Myocardial infarction was also a possibility. So we'll try and keep things clear. But going back to it, like, take me through this. So what was the first time you kind of stumbled into the motivational interviewing methodology or found it as a solution?
I think we might go back a step further, because oftentimes I find that when providers stumble upon motivational interviewing, it makes the most sense when you're coming at it from this conversation experience with patients, where maybe you feel a little stuck. Like, you think you're having great conversations, and just like you said, Dr. Josh, they come back and they haven't really engaged in some of those changes or those exercises you were hoping they would do. Yeah. And as you mentioned, I'm a registered dietitian by initial training. And so if you can imagine, maybe you're sitting in a hospital bed because you are inpatient for some reason, or you're going to see the doctor, and all of a sudden somebody walks in and says, "Hi, I'm Katie. I'm the registered dietitian." Your response maybe would be to kind of watch all of your favorite foods just pop out of your diet, right? Oh, this person's going to tell me I can't eat this. I can't eat that. And, you know, that was kind
of ever again for the rest of my life. It has ended. Oh. There shall be no bowl of ice cream ever. And, you know, I'll never see it again. It's all spring water and romaine lettuce.
Yes. Yeah. So that's pretty interesting. You really want to talk to that person. And as a, you know, grad school student who was doing some clinical work to earn money to pay for school, here I am having all these conversations with people, and I don't know that they always wanted to talk to me. So that's where maybe it started from, is saying like, wow, I feel like I'm grinding my wheels a little bit, and these conversations could be going better.
Yeah. And I think too, I think it's important to think about the context of where these were happening. Like you said, you're a grad student, so you're relatively new at your profession, well-educated, but not well-implemented yet, right?
That's a great point, yes.
The other point is, somebody in a hospital bed, by the time they meet with you, they probably feel like they've been interrogated over the last 48 hours, right? Like, because everybody, whatever that brought them in, they've been asked by the nurses about things, and 18 different people have asked if they have any medication allergies, and they've asked, like, you know, is there anybody we can call? And so I noticed that even in my patients, and I went through, my dad had brain cancer, and I went through that journey with him, and you get to a point where you feel, I don't know what you call it, outgoing information fatigue, meaning I've revealed this 100,000 times. And I think if anybody's like had kids, I'll give you the example. When you go to your OBGYN, I don't know if yours was like this, but ours, every time we went, we had to fill out the same five pieces of paper. And every time they want your address at the top of every one of them. And I'm just like, I'm going to get address labels and just bring them in with us or something. This is absolutely ridiculous. And I'm like, and you know, the number of visits we're going to have with this provider in this 9-month period is significant. And like, you can't remember my address. Now, that's not make or break. I mean, it's a small demographic detail, and they're going, well, we just want it for accuracy, I'm sure. But even then, I was fatigued, and I was not an inpatient. This is an exciting time. This isn't like a life-threatening time, right? My wife is excited to be there. Most of the information we're getting positive or at the OBGYN is positive. And yet you're talking about the opposite situation, like, hey, we're going to be taking things away. We're going to eliminate what you can and can't do. You're looking at your life being reduced. Oh, and by the way, this, you know, 20-something grad student is going to ask you all these questions and make demands of you about what you can and can't do over time. So the context completely sucks. Right? Like, you almost couldn't get a worse context.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it certainly does, you know, paint different pictures that people are really in different spaces to share and receive information. And I think that maybe lends itself to these just good patient-centered conversations that I know you've, you know, talked about previously to your listeners, but also thinking about, well, hey, you know, as a helper, some sort of a provider, and why I want to be a helper, what's the best way for me to approach that kind of situation, regardless of the context that we're chatting in?
Yeah. Well, I know from being married that the best way to do it is to make demands and put your foot down and say, you shall not do this anymore. That always goes really well.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Wait, it doesn't work so well. Yeah. Yeah. So, so there you are, young grad student, you're kind of getting through and learning things, and I'm sure you're in that strange mix at the end of school where it's like classroom stuff and then application. And that's always an interesting period. Because, you know, for me as a chiropractor, I was like, you guys told us we'd see sciatica every other day, and I still haven't seen it in a while. And then I see people with conditions you've never even brought up in school. What the hell's going on here, right? And I'm sure it was a similar thing in your schooling. But when did you kind of hear about this methodology that maybe gave you a framework to work differently?
Yeah, you know, I had the opportunity to start working with some of my mentors over at the College of Medicine, where I was going to school in Detroit. And that team was a really interdisciplinary team of physicians, psychologists, and health education researchers. And it was this idea that, hey, you know, we have this really important grant that came through, as it often does, to bring a lot of great people together to help youth living in Detroit manage their weight. So working with families, working with adolescents, and trying to help them make some changes on tough stuff, what they're eating, what they're moving. Yeah. And many levels too. You're talking about kids and adults. And so that's when I was able to really understand how to approach these conversations. And when MI just became this like, oh, thank goodness, I have a sense of relief and knowing how to navigate, knowing what to listen for, and knowing what to ask. Yeah.
Nice. And I'm sure there are a lot of people going, okay, motivational interviewing, that sounds like something I want to do. Like, I like the idea of motivation. I do interview my patients, blah, blah, blah. But can you shed a little bit of light on, like, what is this methodology? Is it a finite series of questions you have to ask every time? Is it a intent thing, like maybe, you know, get their belief system down before moving forward? Or how is it set up? A broad brushstroke, since we don't have a, we're not doing a 2-hour or a two-day course here.
Yeah. Well, motivational interviewing came out of the Rogerian person-centered therapy, and it really talks about this idea that it's a way of having a conversation with someone that highlights that they have the power and the ability to make a change within themselves. So we're honoring what the person is, a whole person, and we're empowering them to think about moving forward with their health. But if you kind of take away all of, you know, a lot of the scientific terminology, it's just a great way to say, you know, I want to understand and engage with this person. I want to be curious about why, like, what do they want to work on and why they want to work on it and how they want to get there. And then I can figure out how to help them. So it doesn't have a set questions that you're asking, you know, but you really are moving through a communication process where you're engaging with the person. You know, can we work together? Is this going to fit? You're looking at focusing. What are we going to be talking about? Mm-hmm. And then evoking from them, why do you want to do it? And then the how, the plan, like how are you thinking that you're going to do it?
Right. And I think that, you know, I've looked at a lot of research over the last few years, and that term, like, patient-centered healthcare, it's like a classic conundrum or a classic disparity between, I think the researchers are trying to say, like, make sure you don't forget that this is a human being in front of you. There's a human being with back pain. There's a human being with obesity. There's a human being, but deep down, they are a human being. Don't lose sight of that. But then it's like patient-centered healthcare. And I think that anytime those terms get, it's almost like you take a human, you put them through the wash cycle, then you add some bleach, and then you wring them out, and then you know, iron it out. And it's like, okay, the person you're saying in the research isn't like a real human I've walked into. I mean, I think about this with red flags. No patient has ever said, like, I have 5 red flags. Here they are. 1, 2, you know, weight loss, blood in my stool, numbness. But what do they say? They often kind of get into a conversation with you like, yeah, you know, there's blood in my stool, but I'm taking a lot of Advil right now. So that's totally fine. And you're like, no, it's not. They're like, I lost 20 pounds over last month, but it's probably because I just can't eat because of the pain. And it's like, no, that's not true either. But it's how a human being, and I always tell people, like, imagine you're sitting at the Thanksgiving table. What would your annoying uncle tell you? How would he phrase red flags in that situation? Because they might be coming up, right? He might be like, hey, let me ask you. And yet we forget that it's humans, and we think it's going to be some textbook or some checkbox or like, oh, fill out the survey. And come on, that's just not how human beings are. And I think a huge point to that, well, I don't know, that's one part of it. And you look in the research is translating that to go,
Patient-centered means be a human connected with another human at first. And then from there, everything gets real easy. But how many times does that get skipped over? You know? And I'm sure you see it in the hospital too, like, or when you were in the hospital, like, it's this like procedure-based or checklist-based medicine. Like, did I meet this criteria? Yes or no? And yet the person's never, they're not getting better. I mean, they have been treated with medication, but they're not getting better. And I'm like, where did the disconnect occur? I don't know. Do you feel that those stressors as well?
Well, that it just really speaks to, you know, absolutely needing to think about how do I even engage with somebody? Can I talk them human to human? And so what a really powerful way to think about stripping away all of that and all the technical words and just saying we are two people. It's a way, you know, way of being together and seeing if we could possibly move forward.
Yeah.
So I think it adds motivational interviewing, I think adds the element beyond where when you are using the style of communication, it's wonderful to pair with really all kinds of different conversations or interventions that you might already be doing. And so oftentimes motivational interviewing is really used when someone is feeling two ways about moving forward with their health. They're feeling ambivalent. And so that's when you kind of share, you know, here we are, we're in a person-centered conversation, human to human. Mm-hmm. And I'm noticing that you, my patient, aren't really sure if you want to start engaging in this exercise program. And so that's where we see motivation interviewing really become this pretty active communication element that can be powerful at that time and at that place.
Which I'm going to guess, you know, and some of the best methodologies really work regardless of license. You bring a nutrition skill set, right, to the solution side. But the first two steps, like you're saying, would be the same for you and I, even though we have different skill sets, because the how doesn't matter until we've established them as a human being. And then, you know, why does this even matter? Mm-hmm. And it's so easy to brush over that. You know, and I don't know. I offhandedly learned this when I started working with golfers, and I found that my golfers were the best clients by far. And I noticed one commonality with them is like everything that they had, every pain that they had, every ache, every getting them to stretch or exercise is, yeah, this is so you can hit the ball further or so you're more consistent. And if they're a serious golfer, those are the magic words to. I'll show up 5 days a week. And if you think twice a day would work better, just say the words, you know? And it's like, they're willing to do anything, spend any amount of money, come in as much. And then you flip over and you work with another group and you can't get them to show up one time. And like, well, I don't know if it's working and blah, blah. And I'm like, where's this disparity? And that's when I realized, oh, because of the golfers, I'm connecting it back to golf, which is a thing that they have clearly said, that's what matters to me. And I have found the motivation. You know, and I've connected with them. And then, you know, I'm a golfer myself, so I'd use the secret language of golf. But that secret language tells them, I listen to you. I understand what you're going through. You know, I've struggled with it as well and kind of humanizing it. And I was like, God, why are they so much better than all my other patients? Why is it so much easier with them? You know? And then when I was recommended the MI book by somebody and I read it and I was like, oh, duh. Like, you know, it's like this thing probably happened. Yes, it did. And they probably did this. Absolutely. And it just made sense. Did you have a success story where you really felt like, oh my God, this is coming together. I'm starting to see the matrix when you learned MI?
Yeah. And I think it relates back to what maybe I can use some nutrition lingo with the MI world is that I often think about, well, you know, I have to find this person's carrot. What's their motivation to move forward? And really that's the whole crux of motivational interviewing is evoking someone else's, you know, what is their motivation and why do they want to do things? What's their desire to change?
Sure.
And, you know, again, learning this with the adolescent population and with their caregivers, this was a really such a powerful space for me to be in because, you know, when you, It's one thing, I think, as you mentioned, Josh, to have kind of a shared background with someone, like you were with the golfers and you could kind of get it. And then you could probably reflect on things you anticipated was motivating to them. And they, you know, you had that really shared relationship. You know, if you're looking at tools and looking at understanding people that maybe you're just meeting or you don't have that shared background, when you're starting to listen for, you know, what is their motivation? And we'll even use the language of what is their change talk, like we use in motivational interviewing, their desire to change, their reasons, their need to change, and how able they feel to do it. And so it's, you know, sitting across a desk or a table from an adolescent and talking to them about a pretty difficult topic like their weight and improving their nutrition and moving more can be a really sensitive area. And also thinking about also, you know, have talking to a parent about it. And so I think that kind of aha or moment for me where I realized like, wow, you know, this really helps me know what to listen for and what to share back in my active listening, like what to reflect, to show that I am being present with them and that I'm curious. You know, like I'm not going to say, well, you should feel motivated because I'm going to say, all right, tell me a little bit more. And I tell you, you know, adolescents have really beautiful and unique motivations to improve their health. Maybe I can just leave it at that. You know, nothing that I could forget, right?
What were some that you heard that you're like, I never would have bet on that one, but.
You know, I think that just noticing that there was some general ones about like, hey, you know, I want to fit into different clothes. And I want people to feel like, you know, they're going to like me more. And so I think that some of those things kind of pull at your heartstrings and you really kind of look at knowing that in order to support this individual, boosting their motivation by increasing their empowerment, their confidence is going to be really important too.
Right.
But I had a youth that was so motivated to access some, at the time, this is going to age me a little bit, some DVDs so that she could do exercise workouts, that she was willing to kind of get all of her family together and say, you know what, I want everybody to contribute to this. You know, I'm going to have everyone say for my birthday and for the next Christmas, everybody give me money and I'm going to be able to buy this DVD player that I want.
Yeah.
Because like, I'm really excited to do this in my room and to learn these fun moves and move more. And so it's just like this resourcefulness and really excitement that you can start to draw out from people when they are bringing in their own ideas and excited to share it with the world.
That's awesome. I have a story I'd love to share.
Please.
That reminds me of this, like, you know, when we're doing rehab with patients, there's always like, there's a large part of the population, myself included, where the best rehab probably would be anything that gets us to lose like 30 or 40 pounds. Like that's going to make every joint feel better. And then there's also like this specific exercise, you know, this single leg glute bridge with an eccentric contraction will target the exact fibers that you think are good. But like generally moving more gets about everybody better. And then specifically moving in a specific way, maybe will help you even better. So I had this woman who was a commercial real estate agent when I was first in practice. And I moved out to Las Vegas in 2007, early 2007. And you might remember when the economy completely crashed in 2009, 2010. Vegas and Florida were like the two areas that were the epicenters of that crash, right? I mean, it was bad. I had people coming in and just break into tears in the middle of treatment. Like, I lost my job. I don't have any healthcare. I won't be able to come back at all. And it was just crazy times. Anyways, I remember this woman, we'll call her Renee for change the names of the innocent here. But she was a commercial real estate agent, wonderful woman, very dynamic, like super, I don't know how to say it, the kind of dominating personality, but funny and kind of very sharp. But she was, I would say, 30 to 40 pounds overweight, right? And constantly dealt with back pain, and she would complain about the heels she had to wear for work and get dressed up. Anyways, treated her. She disappears for 2 or 3 years during the economic crash. She comes back 3 years later, and I see her name on the schedule. I'm like, oh my gosh, because I remember my early patients, right? I'm like, oh. And I walk into the treatment room, and I'm like, holy crap, who is this person in front of me? She had lost like 50 or 60 pounds, was way more muscular, was just a completely different human. And I said, what's been going on? And she was like, oh, I need you to work on my ankle and Achilles tendon. Like, I have a lot of pain. Why do you have pain? She's like, well, I got into salsa dancing. Okay. And so the story was that when the economy crashed, her work disappeared. She went through a divorce. She had no money coming in. And it's just like a horrible situation. And she's like driving home one day and sees a local bar who's dead empty, that nobody's coming in anymore, has a sign that says free salsa dance lessons Thursdays at 8 p.m. Right. So she's like, I like dancing and I have no money. I like free dance lessons. So she goes in there, dances, and it's like from 8 to 9, it's free salsa dance lessons. And then they try and get you to stick around. Right. So she does that, falls in love with it. Finds another bar that same group taught at across town that did like Wednesday night. So she drives across town for the free Wednesday night. So now she's dancing Wednesday and Thursday night. Then she finds out that they started on a Monday night somewhere else. So she does like free dance lessons. And she's like, yeah, I'd go to the dance lesson and I'd have like one glass of wine and then take off. And she's like, then I started to make a little bit more money and this and that. And I was like, hey, I'm really enjoying the dancing. So then she takes private lessons. And in the end, she's dancing 4 to 6 nights a week for 2 to 4 hours a night, depending on if she has the right partners and everything. And at some point, I'm like treating her ankle. And she asked me, so what do you think I should do for my ankle? And I'm like, you've shed a ton of weight. Your fire inside of you is burning bright. You have the biggest smile I've ever seen on you. You know, you're motivated. And in all the Parker seminars I've gone to, consistent salsa dancing has not been at the top of the list of the greatest rehab strategies, but it's sitting in front of me. And I'm going, oh my God, this is the best thing for this person. And so I always took from her, like, if you're willing, you know, ballroom dancing, if you're interested in doing it for 2 hours, 5 nights a week, that is the best exercise you could do, period. You know, and it's like, well, what about these eccentric hamstring slides? Like, stop, just stop. Fall in love with something, and that's way better. Now, a lot of times you can't get people to fall in love with stuff, but one of the things I think that's great about motivational interviewing, to pull it back to that, is when you find that thing, and I'm not as skilled as you with it, Katie, but I hit that thing, maybe let's say 40, 50% of the time you find that thing. And if you can, it's almost like I picture it almost like a flower that has just broken the surface of the soil. And you're like, oh man, wait till this thing blooms. And, you know, so like with golfers, I've encouraged a lot of people, do you think you could walk around once or twice a week? I mean, you're going to be walking for 4 hours, right? It's not a hard walk. It's not challenging. And so many of them go, you know, I've always wanted to do that. It's just that my friends want to ride carts, or we play Saturday mornings, it's too busy to walk. And I go, well, do you think you could do it Sunday afternoons? Yeah. And they tell me later, 6 months later, yeah, I walk 3 rounds a week. And it's, again, if you looked at the list of, you know, the Center for Disease Control's recommendations for exercise, like walking on a golf course is not in the top 40, you know, salsa dancing, not in the top 10, but yet that's the thing that gets them interested, right? And one guy, I remember, he started walking, and after like 6 months, he got his son, who had graduated college, but really was kind of bouncing around, not doing much, got him to walk on Sunday afternoons with him. And it sticks out in my mind because it became something else, and that becomes healthcare, like capital H, mm-hmm. You know, underline, bold. But if I had not asked him what motivated, and I hadn't gone to that questioning to find out what really interested him, we wouldn't have got to that point where he's, you know, the end story is he's walking with his son every Sunday, probably providing fatherly direction. And his son's going to find purpose in life. And it comes back to this book I read about motivational interviewing, you know? And so I hope people listening, like, it doesn't happen every time. I mean, hell, there's no treatment I've ever given that worked every time with every patient, right? But when you create that environment to have that opportunity and it does work, it's enough to keep me going, you know? I'll take a 50% success rate because the successes are so powerful.
Yeah. I mean, if people are willing to engage and you as a provider are willing to listen and willing to ask, you know, mm-hmm. when people share, when they say it out loud, it's more powerful for them. So, you know, one of the, you kind of had asked me like, what are some of the takeaways? Mm-hmm. You know, again, if we're in a, if you're in a situation where you're working with someone and they just, they, if they feel ambivalent, they're really struggling to kind of make a choice or a decision about how to move forward with their health. And you know, in your heart that, that this kind of conversation and guiding them towards the better health would benefit them really, truly, then, you know, asking those powerful questions, it's very common. And like you said, I mean, I've listened to probably thousands of conversations because I do, you know, have the honor of listening to people have these conversations in their learning process with motivational interviewing. And it's pretty common for us as helpers to say like, well, you know, Josh, what is it that you want to work on? Oh, you know, okay, you want to lose weight. Well, how are you going to do it? And so there's that connection of okay, they've mentioned it once, and then let's go to plan, like what's going to happen. But really spending that time, like you're mentioning, just to understand, like, what's your why? Like, why is it important to you? Where do you see yourself in a couple of years if you were to work on this? And if we were to work together and kind of figure out something that fit, and that language that they give back, you know, that can be such powerful things for you to even repeat and reflect and let them hear again.
Yeah. That brings up an interesting point. Mm-hmm. All of these techniques are often great in theory and in practice, right? How do you remember, I mean, working with hundreds or thousands of people, how do you remember that Katie's why or secret language is, you know, make up something, right? You, if you're the patient and I'm the provider, how do you as a provider track what is the language to use with this person on visit 4 and 10 and 12? To rekindle or not lose sight of that, because, you know, a lot of people are really good on visit 1. By visit 6, you're treating them just like you're treating everybody else, you know?
Yes. Well, you know, and that's a really great point, because it is true that there are ways that we can kind of look at charting to remember so that we kind of have that rapid engagement from the last time they were there. And so I think that that can be one. I've had a lot of, you know, organizations, they might say, you know what we did, Katie? We added a line in our charting notes that said, what was this person's why? Like, why is it important to them to do this? Or why are they confident? Which are a couple key motivational interviewing evoking questions. And so if you go into a conversation knowing, well, when I leave, I have to chart on this. It's often a little accountability for ourselves to go ahead and you know, ask for it so that we can repeat it and understand it. And that's such a powerful connection with the patient. But I will say that it's not uncommon for someone's why at visit 1 to be very different from their why at visit 4 and visit 5. You know, you're not.
Absolutely. So, I mean, because for a chiropractor, I'm guessing you don't run into this, but for us, almost always, if you ask them their why, I would say 80% of people say, I want to be out of pain. And I agree with them. Like, I do want to be, but if you can dig deeper than that, or like, I always look at it as a placeholder, pain is in front of, I want to get back to pickleball. I want to hit the golf ball further. I want to, you know, this knee pain's driving me nuts. Why is it driving me nuts? It bothers me all the time. Why is it bothering me all the time? Blah, blah, blah. My daughter's getting married in a year and I need to lose weight and the knee pain's keeping me from exercise. Okay, we're there. But it starts out as pain. Now, and I always tell people like, yes, that is the priority today. 100% agree with it. And that's why I get hired. Like, nobody ever goes to a chiropractor like, hey, I want to just increase my dorsiflexion 17 degrees. Can you help? Right? They just, we don't get that on the front end. But to your point, like, yeah, that is always, I call it a placeholder. Yes, that is the initial thing, but visit 3, when you're starting to see the clouds part and things are improving, what is your true why?
Yeah, it is a such a nice, curious way to approach every conversation. And there is a lot of talk about, you know, motivational interviewing in a traditional sense can be longer conversations. It really came out of psychotherapy and psychology and addiction research, where, you know, people have a lot more time to have that conversation with the patient. And I know in chiropractic visits, they can be very, very quick, and time is money. So as you're thinking about and maybe engaging with some of the motivational interviewing resources, sometimes it's just a matter of again, kind of picking up, like, where can I be curious about someone's desire, reasons, need, ability to change, and just kind of ask that question every time. Remind me, oh yeah, you mentioned this last time, or how are you feeling? Why is this important for you to continue moving forward? Because then people will reengage with you. They'll remind you. They'll appreciate your curiosity. So I think that that motivational interviewing often goes hand in hand with really great engagement. Mm-hmm. And the more we engage, the more we see people, you know, we retain people longer. So I think that these can be some nice compliments for us to think about, like clinical outcomes as well as retention, because we're building that, but also, yeah, you know, the actual clinical outcomes for the individual where maybe they're doing the exercises more.
Yeah. You bring up a great point. Like if, you know, as with our patients, oftentimes the reason we start things are not the reason that we continue things. And if you're sitting there saying, why would I ever do this? Start because it'll make your business a whole lot easier. If you can keep somebody around for 20 visits instead of 12, it's a lot easier business to run. And oh, by the way, if they come to you 20 times instead of 12, you probably can have better treatment plan. And oh, by the way, if you continue to give them the exercises as they progress, they'll have better outcomes. And oh, by the way, people that have better outcomes and feel listened to and that you're curious with refer more of their friends. Oh, and by the way, you'll get a ton of positive Google reviews because they'll say like, Dr. Katie's the only one who ever listened to me, right? And people see that in your Google reviews, they'll be like, say no more. This is the place I want to go for my healthcare. And oh, by the way, it's more rewarding when people do their homework, the thing that you know will help them get better. When they actually do it because of what they're motivated by, you feel like a more successful practitioner and you go, this is why I went to school. This is what I pictured when I was in school of what the what healthcare would actually look like. And we get so distracted by that along the pathway. I'm glad you brought that up, Katie. It's like, it's overlooked. And if that's the thing that gets you started, that's your why early on, totally fine. Like we all have bills to pay, but you know, what's the thing that'll keep you going is sometimes different. Do you have any good stories? Oh, go ahead. I don't want to cut you off. Yeah,
sure. I mean, you know, there's some interesting work coming out that really is talking about motivational interviewing can support providers and decrease some burnout feelings. So, you know, if you're feeling like you're putting a lot of energy and you're either like pushing someone up a hill to change or you're pulling and dragging, kind of hoping that their patients will make a change, you know, this communication style, which has elements of kind of how the relationship goes and some pretty specific language strategies, what to ask, what to reflect with your language, how to support autonomy with overt statements. You know, when you're combining those things, it actually just empowers providers so much more because then you're saying, you know what, I'm inviting this person, I'm giving them these opportunities, and they're going to build their own path, right? I've given them a really good space to grow and to think about change. And, you know, it's not my job to force them to do it.
Yeah. And I got to ask, since you are program director for the clinical nutrition?
Functional, yes.
Functional nutrition at Parker. I'm sure there are people who are sitting there saying, okay, I'm interested in nutrition. But what I'm hearing is that I'm going to guess if we look at a pie chart of a nutrition program, the ones that are all about, well, this food has been shown to lower blood glucose by 0.6 millimoles per deciliter over, you know, 12 weeks. Like, I agree, those chemical reactions are the basis of nutrition. But the basis of clinical nutrition almost doesn't, like the chemistry doesn't matter until you get the psychology right. Right? How much of the program that you're putting together at Parker is motivational interview or that style of implementation matters more than like which exact fruit is better?
Mm-hmm. Well, we certainly recognize that the tools that go into becoming a good functional nutrition provider are ones that practice how to have good health behavior change communication with your patients. And so that, you know, those courses are definitely there and understanding the psychology between choices that people make. And so in our case, eating, but, you know, anytime, any topic somebody might be working on. So I think that, you know, kind of adding in that it's just a lot of different lifestyle elements that we're working towards. But I will say, you know, as much as we want our graduates to know the nitty gritty, some of the most powerful ways that a provider can help someone in these types of conversations is to elicit their own ideas. is to actually sit on your hands and not be the one that's telling or directing or persuading, but really asking, what do you know about healthy eating? What are some changes you might want to make? And that's when it comes, oh, I've been reading this, I've been reading that. And you really find out that, yes, you have an extremely packed brain with whatever your field is, but for that individual, they might have exactly what they need information-wise with just a little bit from you to kind of tailor it, and then actually more conversation about their why so that they start taking those ideas and moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting when you say that, because like even just the term nutrition, to some people that means food choices. To some people, I'm sure it's more dosage or measurement than choices. And to some people, I know, I'm sure you run into this, at least in the chiropractic space, is that nutrition to them means supplements. Like that's a direct line, you could never talk nutrition without talking heavy duty supplements. I remember I had a patient who owned a local supplement store who was a great referral source. And I just happened to be talking to him one night about like how his business is. And he said, oh yeah, you know, my business really, I keep the lights on with my hyper buyers. And I was like, oh, what is that? And he goes, we have a group of, and it was a relatively small store, but it's in Las Vegas. And so big city, but small store. And he said, I have a group of, I think he said 47, is either 37 or 47 people that spend over $1,500 a month in the store. $1,500 of supplements is a lot of supplements, right? It's kind of surprising, right? But he knew that's how I keep the lights on in my business. But he said, most of my customers will spend less than $100 per month, meaning they come in for their vitamin D and a C&E supplement or something like that. And I was like, wow, like that just blew my mind that some people look at that as like the solution, as the, to a point of $1,500 worth. And I was like, wow. Now, when you talk to those people, I'd love to know their why, because they might perceive that without supplement, you're giving up. Why would you do it without supplements? I don't understand that approach, right? And so you're saying, I love the fact you're saying you allow your students to say, hey, I'm coming from this world. You know, I'm coming from two vegetarian parents, or I'm coming from a dad who was a cattle rancher and, you know, beef jerky was in my Christmas stocking, and a meal without beef is not a meal, you know, but that affects everything you do, right? We can't deny those things. But also, if that's what they're interested in studying or learning about, it's that, just like the exercise, that's the thing they'll implement, and that's the thing they'll be interested in. So yeah, it just makes me think about it. But I love that approach that you don't just talk about the MI, you use it even when you're doing curriculum development, huh?
We do our best. That's right. Because it, you know, I think understanding someone's why and engagement, it's a key thing for many things. Yeah.
Nice. All right. Well, if people want to maybe jive on more of this and feel comfortable with you and find some guidance, how could they get a hold of you or reach out?
Well, the best way is to reach me at my Parker University email. So my first and last name, Catherine Hartlieb at parker.edu. And, you know, there's some really great motivational resources, interviewing resources like the motivationalinterviewing.org, where it's the group of trainers, Mint trainers, you might see, Motivational Interviewing Network of Trainers. That has a list of people around the country and around the world, and a lot of great book resources as well.
Awesome. And by the way, if you're trying to reach out to Katie, Catherine Hartlieb, Catherine is with a K, K-A-T-H-R-Y-N. There's one or two ways to spell Catherine, but yeah.
Thanks for pointing that out.
And if you can't find that, you can always go to the Parker website and find her email there, you know, in the clinical nutrition program, right?
Yeah, functional nutrition, yes.
Mm-hmm. Functional. I keep messing that up. I'm sorry. All right. Last question for you. If you're talking to a group of chiropractors, and we're going to be sitting down with our patients the day after we listen to this podcast, right? Could you give us one or two questions to ask, or one or two things to set up that you think might reveal enough information that it might change our perspective or give us a window to work with that person, et cetera. What would those, that setup be? Or
Sure. I mean, it can be really great just to know that motivational interviewing conversations happen when people feel ambivalent about change. So I'm going to say that we sit and say, well, we want to ask about their why. But if someone is coming to you and they are super motivated and they want information and they want to go, 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 then you go with them. All right. I think that that's a one, because sometimes people feel like, you know, when do I not use motivational interviewing? Mm-hmm.
But so if it's January 1st and the person is like, this is the year I'm losing weight, I've already bought the supplements on Amazon, I bought 3 outfits to work out, what workouts do I need to do? You don't, that's not the time to say, stop. You need to be smart about this. You need to start with 10 minutes a day. We'll move to 11 in 2 weeks. And then we'll have been at 12 week. You know, you're saying, don't do that. Just be like, hey, that's great. Let's go to the next. Let's go to the gym. I'll go to the gym with you. Let's start. Let's actually run to the gym. It's going to be a great day.
It's going to be a great day. Yeah. You can of course ask them about like why, but that isn't really the time for you to sit there and be like, well, tell me the pros of doing this. Well, tell me the cons of doing this, right? You don't want to have somebody talk themselves out of it. You just want to go with them. But it's when people are struggling in that zone of, I'm not sure, I can't make a decision. This is when you put your motivational interviewing tools to use and just say things like, well, what is it that you might want to focus on? And before going into the how are you going to do it, my encouragement, like if you're going to go into the office tomorrow and give this a try, is to ask someone why. Okay, well, why is it that you want to work on this? And just reflect back what they're sharing with you. Because that's a really powerful way for somebody to express, tap into their own intrinsic and extrinsic motivation, and then hear it back and internalize it even more.
Okay. Do you repeat that back to them exactly as they said it?
Well, that's a great question. There's a couple different types of reflections, and this can be a really fun resource to kind of look up in training and future conversations. But there are simple reflections. Yes, you can just certainly repeat back a piece of that. You know, you want to be a better golfer, period. That's all you got to say. Or you can take it a little deeper. You can make some guesses about why that person wants to do that. Oh yeah, you're really excited to show off your skills to, you know, all your golf buddies next year. So there's different ways, but even if just repeating back what they said so they hear it, that's a really powerful step to increase their, you know, retention of their motivation.
Yeah. Just to reflect on that, I've had 2 experiences that I can think of. One of which, when the person says, I'm going to work out, effectively saying, I'm going to eat 500 calories a day and work out 4 hours a day for the next 4 years. And you're like, so let me just state back what I've heard. And you say it and they're like, okay, yeah, I have kids and a job and I can't do it. And so it clarifies for them. And then I've also had the opposite when it's like, okay, and they give you an answer. I'm going to lose 20 pounds this month by walking for half an hour once a week. And you're like, so that's what I'm hearing. And they're like, oh, now that you say that, yeah, that doesn't seem like it's going to be effective, you know? But it's funny when you say that, because I've had that where you just tell the person back what you've heard and they're like, huh, that's ridiculous. And I've had it actually some, well, I'm not going to get better if I only come in twice a week. So can I come in 4 times a week? And as a chiropractor, I'm like, absolutely. Especially if you're motivated to come in 4 times a week. But proposing that on the front end would seem overly aggressive sometimes, you know, but they're like, yeah, I have that. I remember one guy, I have a water skiing trip coming up for my anniversary and I got to be feeling good by then. And okay, you know, so that's great. So repeat back to them what they've said as either a way to motivate or to clarify.
Okay. Yeah. Those reflections don't equal I approve or I agree. It just is, again, what you're saying, that clarity or letting them hear back their language. There are really strong ways to share information and professional advice in the motivational interviewing learning world. And so there are some great strategies. I don't know that we'll have time to chat about today necessarily.
Sure.
But, you know, again, reflecting or clarifying, again, doesn't equal agreement. It just equals, hey, I'm one human. let's go back to where we started. I'm one human trying to connect with you, my patient, as another human, and make sure that I'm understanding and engaging so we can figure out a way forward together.
Okay. So last part of that, you know, a lot of times that happens in the initial patient interview history time, but let's say it's visit 8 with a chiro. Like, it's very common for us to see people a lot of times, right? Any suggestions for a way to clarify what we're doing? Because we're starting to get to that point where the pain's fading away and maybe the perception or the focus is changing in our patient's mind. And I always think that's a critical time to grab onto and be like, we're not done. And if you wake up tomorrow with no pain, that is a great step in the right direction, but that's not the end of what we're doing, right? In that case, is there a way to repeat? Would you say re-ask? Would you clarify? What would be a good MI step there?
Yes. It does sound like you are looking at how are we walking together. So it equals like we're engaged. Clearly, we're in this great relationship, and perhaps we're at a point of refocusing and just acknowledging. Okay. Like, I'm going to honor and ask for your collaboration and how we best move forward. Where, you know, from my clinical side of things, you know, noticing this, and these might be some steps moving forward, but how, you know, like, what is your impression? And really, you know, acknowledging that that conversation needs to happen, honoring that the person has the autonomy to guide forward how that it goes, just really seems like such powerful person-centered communication as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as you're saying it, I'm thinking, yeah, that'd feel really good in my marriage. That'd feel really good in my job. That'd feel really good in my interactions with even the car dealer, you know, like, hey, this is your car. How do you want it? When do you want it? You know, it's just like, oh yeah, we're all humans. I mean, that's how we started this conversation. And I'm like, that's the key here. And then since we are humans, are there better ways to be more human? And it just clarifies everything. So fantastic. Well, Dr. Katie, this has been a pleasure. I really appreciate your insights here, and I hope that people do get interested in motivational interviewing and the power of it and discovering kind of their own journey within there. I do feel like in healthcare, we got to get better at diagnosis. Every year we're in practice, we should get better at diagnosis, get better at treatment skills, and we should get better at our communication skills. And I feel that communication is the one that gets the short shrift, like it's forgotten all the time. So I appreciate you shedding light on this, and I really appreciate you coming on today for this podcast. I think it's been very enlightening for me.
Well, thanks, Josh, Dr. Josh, for, you know, giving communication skills a space in your work and with your audience. So it's an important nod. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, on behalf of Dr. Katie Hartley, this is Dr. Josh Satterley saying, go out there, maximize your license, and live the life you dream of. Thanks so much, Katie. Thanks a lot for listening to Clinic Gym Radio. If you're looking for more information about me, about us, about our programs, then just head to clinicgymhybrid.com. Again, that's clinicgymhybrid.com. You can check us out there. We've got our accelerator program and a few other programs that will help you get up and running as quickly as possible and making more money while providing excellent active therapy to your patients.